Okay, so we can get started. This is Dr. Teitelbaum calling. It's June 6, 2011. Tonight we're going to discuss a very important topic where we're going to discuss three separate topics, but they're all kind of interrelated. First, we're going to discuss milk and how important it is in the diet, because I've been in practice 25 years now, and in these past 25 years, on the first visit when I question people and go over their case history, I can't say I've ever had a new patient coming in who's had whole milk in the diet. Most people have no milk, and those who do have milk have either skim or 2% milk, so they're taking it in the wrong way. It's also a very emotionally charged subject. We have lots of vegetarians who fight me on this tooth and nail, macrobiotic people, vegans. So if you look at what the ancient doctors of India recommended and the way they talked about milk, they revered milk and thought of it as a nectar. So somewhere along the way, from what they said and what we're living in today, we've lost this really sacred and divine knowledge of these ancient rishis, where the way they were describing to take milk, how important it was for the body, we're breaking all the rules, not knowing that we are, but at any rate, none of us have milk, and those of us who do don't take it in the correct way. So I thought we'd start with milk. Most people think of milk as a poison for many reasons. Now that we've had several discussions, one on cholesterol, one on the friendly bacteria and the channels, we can review some of those things and put and apply those type of knowledge into tonight's lecture. So, for example, we talked about the physical channels in the body and the fact that when you eat food, it goes through these physical channels. Once you swallow food, it goes down the esophagus, through that channel, into the stomach, the small intestines. Then from the small intestines, it's absorbed into the bloodstream and travels through those channels. And eventually from the bloodstream, the blood carries the nutrients from the food that you ate all over the body until at some point the food has to be broken down into very small particles that go from those delicate physical channels and absorbs into the cells, so that the food that you're eating really can't nourish you at all until it gets into the cells. What you don't want to happen is that the food remains undigested, or you could say semi-digested or even semi-transformed, and it remains stuck in the channels. This is what clogs the channels, not cholesterol, and we all heard that last call 3 weeks ago where I talked about cholesterol in great detail. If any of you missed it, I have it saved. Try to listen to it, because doctors have us convinced that cholesterol clogs our arteries. The arteries are one type of channel that we are discussing now, and that if our cholesterol becomes too elevated, that we should lower it in one of many ways, either with statin drugs or the holistic people use red yeast rice. So we started the lecture. You've only missed a couple minutes, but we're talking about milk tonight and a vegan diet and also how we nourish our bones.
Thanks very much.
Sure. And who is it again?
Harry from Canada. Harry
and
Bhakti.
Oh, hi there. So
hi.
We're discussing milk because many of the vegetarian diets recommend not having milk, especially the vegan diet, macrobiotic diet, and a raw foods diet. It's a very emotionally charged topic, so I thought I'd go over it tonight, because the ancient rishis of India thought of milk as a divine nectar. So I want to make sure people understand milk and that they're not afraid to take it, especially if we discuss how to take it in the correct way. So it's true, milk has some cholesterol in it, but it's been proven that cholesterol has never been shown to cause heart disease. Instead, it's these artificial fats that are creating the problem. These artificial fats, like the trans fats, or hydrogenated oils. These types of fats are processed fats where they take oil, they pump hydrogen into it. That's why they call them hydrogenated. And now once they do that, they become like plastic. In fact, they're one molecule away from plastic. And these will definitely clog the channels, see, or the arteries, it's one type of channel, and create a lot of heart disease and strokes. And yet there's no cholesterol in these fats, see? So we have to, again, get out of our mind that it's cholesterol that's clogging the arteries. Somehow along the way, doctors misunderstood this whole issue, and now they have us believing this incorrect information as well. So what you don't want to happen is that the food that you're eating remains stuck in the channels. It has to go from that physical channel and absorb into the cells. Now, the ancient doctor said that if you take milk in the correct way, it becomes like a divine nectar, that it absorbs, and that people, babies and adults, could live on nothing but just milk, because milk has all the nutrients in it. And in fact, babies can live off of milk. We know that. They can't live off soy milk or almond milk or rice milk. In fact, some babies have died whose parents were so opposed to milk, they put them on those types of milk, and the babies died. But they can live off of cow's milk. So the way the ancient doctors recommended we take milk is the very best way is if you just leave the milk alone, that it's raw milk. This is the very best. We're living at a time now where knowledge is kind of reversed. The ancient rishis of India said that Ayurveda came about because we're living in what they call Kali Yuga. Yuga is a time period, so many thousands of years, and they described four time periods. The first yuga they called Sat Yuga. The word Sat means kind of like everyone's living this high level of knowledge. All the beings are divine and highly enlightened. And we know not to pollute our bodies or pollute the earth. We have good education, politics, everything's wonderful. And because everyone's living all these laws of nature balanced in their bodies, the body can survive for about 800 years. Now, the nature of knowledge is that it's lost somewhat over time, so that as time goes on, some of that knowledge gets lost, and we enter the next yuga down. And these yugas, or time periods, have Sanskrit names, and I don't always remember the names, but the next time period down, some of the knowledge is lost. So because we're breaking some of the rules, the body can only survive for about 400 years, about half what it could do in Sat Yuga. Then more knowledge is lost. We start breaking more rules. We pollute our bodies a little, stay up late, pollute the earth, whatever. And then in that time period, the next yuga down, we live to be about 200. Everything's cut in half and half like that. And then there's the dark period called Kali Yuga. And in Kali Yuga, the knowledge is actually reversed. And they say that everything's backwards. For instance, in Kali Yuga, you could go to a doctor and they would give you something that would harm you. And if you've been listening in on these calls, you hear some of the ways people are being harmed by their doctors with cholesterol medicine. Tonight we'll talk about the bone medicine. They put young teenagers on birth control pills, which cause a lot of the breast cancer we're seeing. And in Kali Yuga, the information that's given out is usually reversed or flip-flopped. So here doctors are telling us to avoid milk, and that's a very, we could call it Kali Yuga thing to say, because milk is one of those great boons to our health. So we're all thinking of it as a bad thing. So again, raw milk is the best. Now here in Kali Yuga, raw milk is actually outlawed. And I'm living in a state right now, New Jersey, where raw milk is outlawed. We are not allowed to have raw milk in this state. That's a very Kali Yuga type thing, if you see what I mean. I have to smuggle milk in from the next state, Pennsylvania, where it is allowed, see? And that's where I get my milk, from the Pennsylvania Dutch farmers. Now, the best milk is where, when you milk a cow and you let the milk sit, the cream will rise to the top. That's called unhomogenized. When you pour that milk out, you'll see clumps of fat coming out, and people historically didn't like to see that, so they homogenized it. Most of the milk that you see nowadays is homogenized, but once they homogenized it, it made it more difficult for us to digest, and then you have people saying they have lactose intolerance, whatever. And it's partly because we're homogenizing it and taking away that layer of fat at the top. The milk should also be organic, meaning the cows weren't given antibiotics and hormones, which will go right to their milk, because lots of toxins, like antibiotics and hormones, are fat-soluble, so it could go into the fat in the milk. Just like when we give the babies the immunizations, the 10 chemicals that are in there to preserve the shots go right to their brains, because now you guys know the brain is made of cholesterol, so it has an affinity for those nasty toxins. same in the cows. When you give them these nasty chemicals or pharmaceuticals, it goes into their milk. Now, they also said that milk is a little heavy and that you should boil it to thin out the fat in the milk so it could easily absorb from the channels and into the cells. So an example of what they meant would be if you drink milk cold, you might notice you get a little mucusy. So, like, you might feel it in your sinuses. The sinuses are one type of channel, and remember we talked about all the different types of channels, channels that carry urine, sweat, toxins, food. And the sinuses are a channel, they carry air. The lungs are a channel, they carry air. Sometimes you could drink cold milk and you might start coughing. That's an example of the cold milk, hard to digest, and it's just clogging the channel. It's not going from the channel into the cells. See? So when people see they get mucusy with milk, then they just discontinue it. But it's because we're taking it in the wrong way. We shouldn't be so quick to discontinue it because our bones, we have so many bones in our body, and they need several hundred milligrams of calcium a day. See? And they also said to keep milk separate from fruits, vegetables, and proteins. And here, we give children milk to drink cold in school at lunch, and lots of people drink milk cold at dinner. So this, according to the ancient rishis, was a big no-no. We want to keep milk separate from those types of foods. It doesn't mix well in the stomach with those types of foods. It does mix well with grains. So many of you who I've have seen as patients know that I've given you recipes where you could cook milk into oatmeal or cream of wheat or rice or even bulgur wheat, but I'm not giving you recipes where we're cooking it, you know, with chicken and vegetables like that. They also said in their textbooks that milk was a little heavy, a little hard to digest, so they recommended cooking it with cardamom. Whenever you take milk, you boil it with some cardamom. Let's say you're going to have oatmeal. You would put the oats in the pot with the milk and put some green cardamom pods. And the cardamom helps you digest the protein in the milk. You could also throw in a cinnamon stick, and the cinnamon helps you digest the carbohydrate in the milk. They also recommended turmeric in the milk, and now you know from my last class on the liver that turmeric is the best friend to the liver. It helps it digest, and it helps it clean the blood. And I know that when I first studied Ayurveda back in 1984, that they were the first classes I took. A whole team of doctors had come from India, and they were sitting there teaching us. And on the sidelines, their wives were sitting, and they were sipping warm milk with turmeric in it. It was like a yellowish milk. And I went up to them and asked them why they were doing that, because it's something you never see in America so much. And they said because it made their skin nice. And what they meant was that the turmeric is a spice that, again, helps the liver clean the blood. And once the blood's clean, it'll be reflected on the skin. Nowadays, people are taking turmeric capsules. It's too much. It'll create a lot of intense heat in the liver. It's too much. And nowadays, we even discovered the active ingredient in the turmeric is called curcumin. And now you guys should know enough from my classes that I've given so far that the ancient doctor said, don't take part from the whole. If you do, it'll make the body sick. And this is a good example of us doing that. There's been about 250 research studies done on turmeric, and they see that it prevents everything from Alzheimer's to allergies to cancer and whatever. And so they found the active ingredient is the curcumin, so now the health food stores are selling curcumin capsules. See, if you do this, now it'll have side effects and toxicity. But the important thing regarding this class is that turmeric is fat-soluble. See, a lot of people are taking capsules of it now. But what fat-soluble means is that it mixes very well in a food in which there is a fat, like ghee. It mixes well in ghee, and it mixes really well in milk. So whenever you take milk, just put a couple pinches of turmeric in there. Don't go overboard with it because it might create too much detoxification in the liver. But this is the way they recommended taking milk. And whenever I've seen anyone from India take milk, they're always simmering it with spices. And if you contrast that to what we do in this country, we just take a glass of cold milk. And then we're all surprised when we realize we can't digest it, or we say it creates mucus. See what I'm saying? Now, you might recall this from my other classes, in that we have in our body seven tissues. The ancient doctors described the Sanskrit names for them were rasa, rakta, mamsa, medha, asti, maja, and shukra. They're the seven tissues. So the rasa is the blood plasma. Rakta, R-A-K-T-A, is the blood. Mamsa is M-A-M-S-A, and this is the muscle. Medha is M-E-D-A. This is the fat tissue. Asti, A-S-T-H-I, is the bone tissue. Maja, M-A-J-J-A, is the bone marrow. And shukra, S-H-U-K-R-A, this is the reproductive fluids. So if you recall from my previous classes, when we eat food, the food goes through these seven tissues, always in that same sequence. It goes first into the blood plasma, and if you're nursing, it'll go right into the breast milk. But if you're not nursing, then from the blood plasma, it goes into the blood, and then into the muscle, and then in the fat, the bone marrow, and then the reproductive fluids. So the food always follows that same sequence whenever you eat it. And the food that you're eating today nourishes these tissues. It spends about 3 to 5 days in each of the tissues. So that means then that the food that you're eating today won't nourish all seven tissues until about a month from now. The only exception to that rule is milk. See how important it was? And the quote from the ancient text was that milk nourishes shukra within 24 hours. In other words, it goes through all seven tissues and nourishes all the way down to the reproductive fluids in one day. And no other food can do that. So see, here we're living at a time during Kali Yuga where the knowledge is so distorted that people think of milk as an evil thing. I have lectured before so many vegetarian groups about diet, and when I get to the point where we discuss milk, it's all they can do to want to escort me out the doors and ask me to never come again. I've even written for some journals and some vegetarian society pamphlets that they give out, or booklets, and they ask me for recipes, and when I give them my recipes with milk, they delete them from the pamphlets, and then they never ask me to contribute again. So here we have the holistic doctors and the allopathic physicians telling us to avoid milk. And like I say, in my 25 years of practice, I've never had a patient have whole milk in the diet. And this is, in my mind, kind of like a travesty, because here's the one food that nourishes all seven tissues in one day. Now, keep in mind, everyone's so afraid of cholesterol. We need cholesterol to make vitamin D. The cholesterol that we take into our body, it migrates up to the skin, and then the sun hits the skin, and it makes vitamin D out of that. And vitamin D prevents all kinds of autoimmune diseases, cancer. Every cell wall in our body is made out of cholesterol. See, that's every cell. I mean, that's a tremendous need for cholesterol there. Our hormones, like our adrenal gland hormones, they're the hormones that keep our mood up, keep our energy up, keep your blood pressure up when you go from lying to standing. And these adrenal glands are our stress glands. They make the stress hormones. They help us get through the day, even with a lot of stress. The adrenal glands themselves are made of 90% cholesterol, and their hormones are made out of pure cholesterol. Same with the reproductive hormones. These are the hormones that keep us young. Women go to great lengths to make sure they have normal amounts of estrogen in their body. The estrogen that they take from the pharmaceutical companies is a nasty type of estrogen that can cause heart disease and cancer. But we should be making our own. And to help your body, to give your body the raw materials it needs to make the hormones, the raw materials are cholesterol, see? So that's why when you first study Ayurveda, a lot of people are taken aback to see that there's a great emphasis on fats in the diet. They have whole milk, ghee. They recommend oil massages. See, so it's different than what you're hearing here in the West, where we should have a low-fat diet. People think it's a good thing to have, like, you cook a vegetable and you eat it dry like that. Now they've discovered, in a recent study I saw, that if you put fat on a vegetable, let's say you cook some broccoli, the actual fat will bring the nutrients from the broccoli or any vegetable across the cell wall, because again, the cell wall is made of fat and you need something to slide it across, see? So, in other words, if you have a raw vegetable, let's say, that raw vegetable can't go from the channel into the cells. The chewing process alone isn't enough to break down the broccoli or the fibers in the raw vegetable, whatever that vegetable might be. And if you cook the broccoli or the vegetable, you'll get more nourishment going into the cells. But if you cook it and then put some clarified butter on it, the clarified butter brings it across the cell wall. And see, nowadays you hear that lots of people recommend raw food diets. Don't cook the vegetables because they say you don't want to kill the enzymes in the vegetable. But the real truth is, if you eat them raw, you don't get much nourishment absorbing into the cells. And that's where you want to see the nourishment going. So it never quite makes it inside the cell. It goes from one end of the channel out the other end as partly insoluble fibers. So it's kind of like you're wasting your time eating it. Also, all the nerve tissue in your body is made out of cholesterol. The brain, all the nerve endings, the myelin sheath, the covering to the nerve. I've had a bunch of patients develop MS who were following low-fat diets, and they were starving their body of important nourishment for the nerve tissue. In fact, very early on, when I started studying with my wonderful teacher, Dr. Ramakant Mishra, who comes from a long lineage of Ayurvedic physicians, his family lineage goes back 5,000 years. When he first started training me about 15 years ago, one of the first patients we saw, he had flown into my office from Florida. He was a very thin guy, and Dr. Mishra felt his pulse, and he flew his hands off his pulse and said, "What kind of a crazy diet have you been eating?" He said, "Your whole brain tissue is all depleted and it's kind of shriveled up and dried up." He said, "Are you having milk and ghee in the diet?" And the man said, "I've been on a macrobiotic diet for 30 years. And he said, "What kind of a crazy diet is that?" He had never heard of the macrobiotic diet. And he said, "You have milk in that diet?" He said, "No." And he wanted to know what kind of fat he had. There wasn't much fat in that diet. And he told him that the nerve tissue was suffering. He could feel it in his pulse. It had all dried up, the brain tissue, the nerve tissue. And he said to him, what disease do you have now? And he was only young, about maybe in his 30s. And he said he had Parkinson's disease, see, from the nerve tissue. And that kind of left a big impression in my mind, that it's a shame that we're all kind of sucked into this idea that low fat is good, you know, and that fats are bad for the body. Now, the bones need whole milk. If you take the fat out of the milk, what will happen is it's the fat in the milk that brings the calcium into the bones. It actually deposits it into the bones. So if you're having something like skim milk or 2% milk, the calcium in that milk is coming in one end of the channel, going out the other end, and never getting into the bones. So it's because doctors recommend 2% or low-fat milk or skim milk that there's an epidemic now of osteopenia, which means the bones are getting thin, and worse is osteoporosis, where the bones are very, very thin now. So that brings me to the next topic, the bones. See, these are all kind of interrelated. When I first opened my practice, the doctors were saying that the minimum daily requirement of calcium was about 800 milligrams. So they told women, take 800 milligrams of calcium. Then everyone still got osteoporosis, osteopenia. Then they bumped it up to 1,000 after a few years. Then everyone started taking 1,000. Still had the same amount of osteoporosis, osteopenia. Then they said, let's bump it up to 1,200 milligrams. And they kept doing this. Then it was 1,500 milligrams. Then they said, you know what? It's not getting absorbed so well. Why don't we add things to the calcium supplement to help it absorb? Things like selenium, vitamin D, maybe some fat-soluble vitamin. And they did that, and still everyone had osteoporosis, osteopenia. Then they bumped it up to 2,000, and now I think it might even be up to 2,500. I've kind of lost count now. My teacher told me, Dr. Mishra told me, that when he feels a person's pulse who's on calcium supplementation, he could feel the calcium sitting there, stuck in the channel. It's not getting out of the arteries and absorbing into the bones. See, it's just stuck there. And he had told me that several years ago. And last year I heard a study was done that people who were taking calcium, the calcium was calcifying the arteries, see, wasn't getting into the bones. And that's why no matter what amount of calcium they tell you to take or whatever you might want to put in there, that it's not helping. The bones are still suffering, see. So that's why the ancient doctors were trying to warn us. Don't take part from the whole. This will have side effects, see. You can't take the calcium out of the milk like that. You have to have the whole milk. So that's why, if you notice when you come see me, we're recommending the foods. We're not recommending taking the extract of the vitamin out of the food and just taking the vitamin, see. Nowadays, they're saying there's such an epidemic of osteoporosis, osteopenia, that there's a lot of pharmaceuticals that are out there. So I thought I should warn you guys as to what these do, because sooner or later, someone you know or someone you live with or whatever, or yourself, might have this as an issue. So if you get a bone scan done and they tell you your bones are osteopenia, again, that means they're a little lacking in calcium, or osteoporosis, even worse, they usually recommend you take a bone-building medicine, like Fosamax, Evista, Actinel. There's a bunch of them, see. People just take them because up until now, the history of medicine has been that you just do what your doctor says. Doctor's advice is like kind of like God, and you just listen to them, you know. People respect their doctors. But now we have to be careful. We have to learn how to navigate our way through the medical profession because they still do some good work, especially in the realm of like a crisis if you break your leg or you have an acute infection. But beyond that, especially when it comes to nutritionally related topics, they're not doing so well. They don't know how to prevent disease either. But so it's good for you guys to know what these bone-building medicines do because it sounds good. Oh, your bones are weak. Here, take Fosamax. It'll build up your bones. We'll do a bone scan. It'll look pretty good on the next bone scan in a few years after you've been on that medicine. So it's good to know that what the medicines do, this is what they do. There's two types of bone cells. One is called an osteoblast. That one builds up the bone. See, it's like building it up, building it up. The other one is called osteoclast. What it does, it breaks down the old bone cells, gets rid of them, and then you build up new bone cells. So that really, the bone is a living tissue. It's not static like when you see a skeleton. It's actually breaking down the old stuff, building up new stuff, breaking down, building up. So what the bone-building medicines do, they poison the osteoclasts, see? So that means now they've poisoned the osteoclasts, and they have died off. So now all you're doing is you're just building up bone. Now, I don't know about you, but when I heard what those medicines did, a little red flag went up in my brain thinking, this cannot be a good thing. For several reasons. One thing is, the ancient doctors said those seven tissues I just talked about, the blood plasma, blood, muscle, fat, bone, they said that throughout life, as toxins enter the body, they go through that same sequence, just like the food does. And the earlier tissues, like the blood plasma, the blood, the muscle, they called these the superficial tissues. That if some toxins get in there, the body will try real hard to excrete them into the bowel movement, the urine, the sweat. You know, you take an antibiotic, some of that residue will come out in your urine or your bowel movement. You might sweat it out a little bit. But over time, if the toxins keep coming in, you take repeated antibiotics. You're on tetracycline for a few years. You get one immunization after the other, one flu shot after the other with all those chemicals in it. Over time, you're exposing yourself to chemicals. Toxins, air pollution, pesticides. These toxins can make their way deep, and the bone marrow is considered one of the deep tissues. And that if toxins were to get in your bone marrow, then you get more serious diseases. See, if toxins get in the superficial tissues, like in the blood plasma, you might get hives. Or if they're in the muscle, you might get like muscle aches and pains and stiffness. Or if they go into the fat tissue, you might start gaining weight or make cellulite. But once they're in the bone marrow, now we're talking nasty diseases like MS, cancer, like that, see? So what are these medicines doing? They're polluting the bone, see? They're killing off the osteoclast. This is one of the deeper tissues. So now you're going to have some serious consequences when you do that. In the early years of my practice, the women were coming in on the bone medicines, and, you know, medicine's outside of my scope of practice, and I really can't tell someone to stop a medicine. So I just let them stay on it. And as time went on, they came in, and I got to see certain patterns emerging of the women who were on these medicines. First of all, there was an imbalance in pitta. Now you guys know the words vata, pitta, and kapha. The word pitta is the element of fire and water.
Marianne?
Uh-huh.
Can you ask people to mute their phones?
Yeah, if everyone could press *6, that will mute you, and then my voice will be clearer. Sometimes people have dogs barking in the background or babies crying or whatever. Does that sound better, Kathy? Okay. So we'll continue on then. So early on, women were taking these medicines, and I just let them. You know, I can't take them off them. And what I started to see emerge, the pattern emerge, was that they were all coming in with all kinds of infections, like bladder infections, yeast infections. And no matter how hard I tried to give them the friendly bacteria, it seemed like it was killing, destroying the friendly bacteria. I remember having an older woman. She was coughing so much with, like, constant chronic bronchitis for months and months. I thought it was going to take her out because she was in her 80s. And finally, her doctor told her to go off her bone medicine, and it was coming from that. So then after that, whenever I had someone come in on the medicine who had a chronic cough, I told them to talk to their doctor about maybe going off the medicine. Recently, I've had a few OBGYN doctors come visit me, and they asked me what I use for the bones. One in particular told me that she and her sister were on these bone medicines for about 12 years. And what happened with both of them is when they just bent over to pick up something, their legs broke. And they said that it's because this type of bone growth is not intelligent. So your body knows how to form intelligent bones. But when you start fooling around, killing the osteoclasts like that, then the resultant bone that you're making, even though it looks good on the next bone scan, it's creating very brittle bones. And one day on the front page of the Inquirer, I saw, this was about 2 years ago, an article talking about women all over the country who were committing suicide because they were on these bone medicines. And the bone that we use the most is the TMJ. That's the temporomandibular joint, in other words, your jawbone, because we talk all day long, and that bone moves more than any other bone. And they said it was creating this big issue that this bone was disintegrating and just breaking down. And it was creating so much pain in the women that they were committing suicide. Now, a few years ago, I was lecturing on the bones. I was out at a yoga center, and I was talking about that. And someone raised their hand and said, "That's not true. You know, you're just a chiropractor, and you don't like medicine, and you're just opposed to medicine." And she was going on and on, this rant about how that wasn't true. And another woman rose up her hand and said, "It is true." She said, "I work for an orthodontist. And it's the number one issue in orthodontia right now. Whenever we have our meetings, they're trying to figure out how to work on people's TMJ and their pull teeth and whatever, realizing that this is a problem now with the TMJ, that women that are on these medicines, they don't know what to do because the bone is so brittle. So the other thing that we see in the pulse in Ayurveda is that there's an intense heat that's created, or too much pitta, we call it again in Ayurveda. Pitta is the element of fire and water. So when someone's on this, there's so much heat in the liver and the blood, heat that you normally wouldn't have otherwise in your life. So it's creating a lot of disturbance. And this heat is what's killing the friendly bacteria in the gut. So then once the friendly bacteria dies, then your whole health can go, you know, because that prevents any kind of infection, whether an overgrowth of yeast, or bladder infections. In fact, I've had several people come in who went on these medicines they were so sick after they went on them, just with their immune systems. They kept getting one infection after the other. And finally, I had another woman come in whose whole body was in severe pain after she was on her medicine about 8 years. And she went online to see if other women had felt this. And she brought to me a packet, 1-inch thick packet of women who were talking about these medicines and what happened to their health when they went on them. And I spent the next few hours that night just going through, poring over the packet of case histories of women, warning other women, do not go on these medicines, do not go on the medicines. So I did my own research in this. My teacher, Dr. Mishra, when he first came to America, I was one of the first doctors that he trained. And another doctor that he trained was Dr. Nancy Lonsdorf. She's a medical doctor who took her undergraduate training at Stanford University, and her medical degree she got from Johns Hopkins. And he trained her so much, she wrote a couple books while she was training with him, and she praised him every other page in the book. But one of the books she wrote was called A Woman's Best Medicine for Menopause. And what she did, I thought, was a very smart thing. She had a whole chapter in her book just on the bones. And what she did, she talked about this issue, how the bone medicines kill the osteoclast, and she herself thought it was a dangerous thing to be doing. So she interviewed the world's leading bone researcher. She actually interviewed him, and she point blank asked him, would you take any of these medicines if it were you? And he said he wouldn't, see. So that's kind of important for you guys to know in case your mother or yourselves are ever told they have osteopenia or your grandmother. You want to think through and try to get them on a diet that has whole milk in the diet. Sometimes people say to me, well, what if you can't digest the milk? Well, then you fix your digestion. It means something's wrong with your digestion. So when people see me, I work on their digestion for several months, and I try to get them to where they can tolerate the milk. Because partly it's the person's own problem with their digestion. But partly, if you're taking the milk in the wrong way, like we were just talking about, if you drink milk cold or you mix it in the stomach with anything other than grains, see, then it's going to bother you. It's going to turn into gases in the stomach and bloat you out, and you'll feel a lot of pain when you take it. So, now the final topic I want to cover, this is all interrelated again, is that every other week, it seems, a mother will come in or a grandmother and tell me that their daughter or granddaughter or son wants to go on a vegan diet. It seems to be all the rage. Everyone's on it. You go to places like Whole Foods Market, and you know they're displaying all kinds of gluten-free and this-free and vegan diet things, and as if this is a good diet. This is one of the most dangerous diets, so I thought I would get that information out now to you guys. The ancient doctors said in their textbooks that you need something from a cow, not every day, every meal, they said. Now keep in mind, these were the wise men of India. They said their knowledge came directly from heaven, you know. They were highly enlightened. And they say that when knowledge comes to you, when you're enlightened, it's knowledge that will never change, even for thousands of years. The kind of knowledge that the sun rises in the east, it's always going to rise in the east and set in the west. You don't have to think twice about it. Nowadays, when we have research, you might see someone says, these antibiotics are good for you. And then later they say, oh, the antibiotics, this research shows that, you know, while they might have been good, they do this damage to the liver. In other words, the research that they're doing may or may not be good knowledge, but the knowledge that the ancient rishis wrote in their textbooks was very sound knowledge. And they felt that at every meal, you need something from a cow. Now, they themselves were strict vegetarians. So they were saying whether you have milk or some paneer or some yogurt or buttermilk, and they show different ways to make buttermilk, or ghee. I know that when I was in chiropractic college, same thing there. Everyone in America, when they decide to eat healthy, they go into a vegan diet, and I tried the same thing. I was very weak, very emaciated. I could hardly get to my classes. I developed several health problems from that diet. Luckily, I started studying Ayurveda. And as soon as I had that first cup of warm milk, I could feel my body coming back. But I was losing my health quickly, even at a young age. But at any rate, let's examine these diets, like the vegan diet. First of all, there's a lot of soy in the diet. Now we know, if you've been listening to my classes, that soy is very channel clogging. In fact, I described a case history in the last class of someone, one of my patients, who dropped dead from a heart attack, and he ate a vegan diet. He was just having tofu and soy milk, no cow's milk. And see, the soybean, the fat in that, we cannot absorb into our cells. So it remains stuck in the channels, and it clogs them. The other problem with soy is that it has an unintelligent estrogen that can create cysts and tumors. Almost every week I get someone in who's been drinking a lot of soy milk. Like yesterday, I got someone who's been a strict vegan, and she's had this tumor on her pancreas, and her periods won't come, and she's young. It's like that. We see that day in, day out. I had another one who was vegan, and she was eating a lot of soy, and her thyroid gland became depleted because the soy has isoflavones in there, and these isoflavones depress the thyroid gland, and that can create bad arrhythmias in the heart. In fact, I had another patient who was drinking a lot of soy milk every day, and when she came in, I felt her pulse. It was the first visit, and the pulse was so irregular, it actually scared me because I thought her heart was going to stop beating. And she said to me that she was on medicine to keep her heart beating regularly, but the medicine wasn't working. That's why she was coming to me. And I could feel her thyroid gland pulsating in the pulse. So I told her right away, I said, "Do you have soy in your diet?" And she said, "Oh, yeah, I have a lot of soy every day. I eat tofu, and I don't have any cow's milk," as if that was a good thing, "and I just have soy milk." So I told her, "I'm not even going to put you on any herbs," I told her. "I'm just going to see what happens if you stop the soy and then come back next week." She came back the next week, and I felt her pulse. It was real regular, beating regular. And she said she even went off her medicine during the week. See, just the soy was creating depression of the thyroid gland, and her heart was beating all over the place. Since then, this was several years ago, I can't tell you how many women I've treated with weak thyroid from soy creating a lot of arrhythmias, irregular heartbeats, see? So here we have soy. This is one of the mainstays of the vegan diet. It has unintelligent estrogen, these isoflavones that depress the thyroid, and it's severely channel clogging. You could grow all kinds of tumors and cysts with soy. A lot of people say, "Well, you know, I don't want to have milk. I don't like the way they raise the cows here in America." That's another issue. And they say, anyway, cows or calcium, you can get calcium in greens, green leafy vegetables, or sesame seeds or nuts. See, you can get a little bit. That's true, a little bit in there. But the amount of calcium we need every day for all these big bones that we have is too much. You can't get enough in the greens, see, and the sesame seeds. So the other thing is, now you guys, again, know these words, vata, pitta, and kapha. And you know that vata in nature is the element of lightness, dryness, see? And so this vata has, it's situated in different parts of the body, especially like in the brain up in that area. So if the diet becomes too light, like there's not enough fat in the diet, like not enough ghee, or not enough whole milk, then we run the risk of developing what's called a vata imbalance. The diet is too light. When the diet's too light, then you can develop all kinds of symptoms of vata being out of balance, which means you could become nervous or anxious, worried. You could develop insomnia. And vata, when it's out of balance, emaciates the tissues, meaning that your bones would suffer, they become frail. You could have flaky nails. You could have cavities in your teeth. See, your hair could fall out. You could lose weight, wrinkle up, kind of like you're shriveling up. See, like that, like you're aging rapidly. Because these fats keep us lubricated. See, estrogen is made out of cholesterol. Any woman will tell you, once they go through menopause, they feel like they're aging more rapidly. The ancient doctors said, keep up your intake of fat. That won't happen then. Because if you have enough cholesterol in your body still makes estrogen. But when the estrogen, when these hormones get too low, then your hair starts falling out and your bones get thin, see? You start aging So that's the worst thing you can do, is to follow a low-fat diet into old age, or really any age. Now, the ancient doctors themselves were vegetarians, but they said you don't have to be vegetarian in order to be healthy. So that's kind of good to know. Some of our patients feel guilty that they want to eat a little chicken, turkey, or fish. They said that was fine. They even gave recipes in their textbooks about making chicken broth with the bones, like we would make chicken soup. They were saying how that could nourish a sick person back to health. So again, if you want to be vegetarian, you must have something from an animal at every meal. Again, whether it's milk, yogurt, buttermilk, paneer. Because you may, if you have a diet that is fruits, vegetables, grains, and legumes, that's like a vegan diet where there's no animal products in there, then you're going to become deficient in vitamin B12. And when you become deficient in B12, it's going to affect you emotionally. You could suffer depression, mentally. You'll start to go off because, again, Vata resides up in the mind. I know when I was in chiropractic college, we had a few kids in there that were on the raw foods diet, and they seemed like, to me, they were insane. They were just so crazy because they were creating a great disturbance of Vata in their minds, see? They were hyper and obsessive and compulsive, and when you talk to them, you could tell that they were way out of balance. So, lately I've been seeing a number of kids coming in very sick on the vegan diet, so sick that they're again, I can see it's affecting them mentally from the lack of B12. A lot of them are very depressed. Their Vata's out of balance. They're, again, nervous, anxiety-ridden, obsessive. And but they also seem to be coming in with autoimmune diseases at a very young age as well. So I'm not sure exactly why that would be, but it could be that it's creating such a disturbance that the immune system is getting disturbed as well. But because the ancient doctors didn't talk about what would happen if you avoided the animal protein. So, but I think, and the animal fat, but I could see, I had one young boy come in, he was about 19, he was on a vegan diet, and he told me that his fingers were no longer getting their circulation, they were like turning black. So they went and had lots of tests on it, and the doctor said that the thing that they would recommend is to cut his fingers off. So I said, why don't we see what's causing it, and maybe this will go away. And he told me that they called it Berger's disease, and I said, well, that's just a name, that doesn't mean anything. He said, it's an autoimmune disease where my body's attacking the blood cells and my blood's not circulating to my hands anymore, so we need to chop off my fingers. So I said, let's see what's affecting your immune system like that. And I asked him what he ate, and he told me he was a vegan. So I had him slowly introduce milk and ghee in the diet and put him on a few different herbs, and slowly but surely the imbalance went away, the Berger's disease went away, and he got good circulation back in his hands. So, but since then, I've seen many teenagers come in very sick on the vegan diet. Little by little, their health comes back when they go off the diet. So now at this point, if you guys want to press *6, you can unmute yourself, and I'll see if you have any questions.
Marianne, it's Kathy.
Uh-huh.
I got a couple for you.
Okay.
The unhomogenized milk.
Mm-hmm.
I can only get that if I'm not up near you, near Whole Foods. I do get the organic whole milk. That's the only thing that's in my
area.
Okay,
that's fine. That's better than nothing.
And I make it with the with nuts and dates and raisins with along with the grain. Is that, should I not do the nuts with it?
No, that's fine. Mhm.
That's okay?
Yeah, milk also mixes well with nuts. Mhm.
Okay.
Marianne,
maybe so if it's a protein, you mean like chicken or fish?
Yeah,
right?
I meant like animal protein. Like you don't want to make, you know how they make those soups sometimes with milk as a base? You might have like...
Exactly.
You don't want that, like chicken and broccoli with milk. You don't want that.
Gotcha. With the vegetable and things. Okay.
Right.
Is it okay if the cardamom is ground?
You can, but the green cardamom still has more active ingredients. Once you grind it, then it might have lost some of its capability. I'm sure it's still pretty good, but the real strict Ayurvedic people like Dr. Mishra, he's always putting the whole cardamom pod in his milk. I've never seen him put the ground up. Same with the cinnamon stick.
Marianne, this is Eileen. I have a question. How much milk do we have to drink per day to prevent the osteoporosis?
Well, you know, everybody's different. It depends on what you feel like you need. Just try to be more in tune with your body. It depends. If you're more Vata, you're going to need a little more than the Kapha types. You know, for me, I have a little more Vata in my body type.
Okay.
So I crave milk, and I have an awful lot of milk in my diet. But for someone who's a little more Kapha, a little more heavy, they might need it, you know, once a day. I feel like I have to start my day with milk and end it with milk. Just go by how you feel. I know if I don't have milk for a day, my strength starts to go downhill. But I'm sure the Kaphas are a little more sturdy and bulky. You know, they can probably just have a little less.
Okay,
put it this way, the Vatas need the most, the Pittas need medium amount, and the Kaphas need the least. Not to say they don't need any, but they have to watch it, whereas the Vatas don't have to watch it so much.
Okay, so the other second question is, how long after you have a meal is it okay to drink the, you know, have the milk? Because you said it's not good to have it with fruit or with protein. So if I just had dinner, you know, at 6 o'clock, how long should I wait before I have my hot cup of milk?
Until you feel like you've pretty much digested that meal, you know, maybe like by 8 o'clock. It depends on you. Some people can digest so quickly and that last meal was so light that maybe an hour later they could have it.
Okay.
But if it was a little heavier and your digestion was a little weaker, you have to get a feel for it yourself. You'll know if you drank it and you felt it was maybe bloating you or something and it was too soon, then you'll know next time to wait a little longer.
Okay.
But it depends on your digestion and then the meal. So,
Marianne, would milk help my TMJ?
Well, put it this way. If you don't have milk, it'll make it worse. You'll have more aches and pains in the body because the hormones that you make to take you out of pain, these cortisone that the adrenal glands make, it's made out of cholesterol. Plus the fats in the milk and the ghee, they're going to lubricate all your joints. So if you didn't have those types of fats in your diet, you would have a lot of aches and pains. So your TMJ might be worse if you weren't having it. But, you know, the best thing is to have some milk, and then there's some herbs that could help to fix, like, the cartilage and whatever.
So just maybe have, like, for me, you know my history, maybe just try maybe a half a glass at the end of the day before I go to sleep.
Some people feel they can digest paneer better. If you can't digest milk no matter what and you've tried everything, then I'll tell a person just to have paneer.
Which I've been eating. I love the paneer.
Yeah.
What is paneer?
It's a cheese that you make. I give all the patients that I see the recipe where you boil milk and add lemon juice to it. And it forms these curds right away. And the curds are very nourishing. So it seems that some people just can't tolerate milk. Not a lot, but the milk makes them a little mucousy. So I have them eat the paneer then, especially if they're vegetarian.
Marianne, how do you spell the osteoclass?
Oh, O-S-T-E-O.
Okay.
C-L-A-S-T, osteoclast. And osteoblast is the same way except with a B instead of the C.
So osteoblast, right?
Blast, yeah. You should see if you could get that book out of the library, A Woman's Best Medicine for Menopause by Nancy Lonsdorf, M.D.
Oh, I've got to write that down. By Nancy?
Lonsdorf, L-O-N-S. D-O-R-F. And just look up that section on the bones. You guys have to arm yourselves for when you go to the doctor and they say your bones are depleted. A lot of people in America's bones are going to be depleted because you put more calcium in the bones when you're younger. And now that we realize, you know, we have this osteopenia now, it's a little too late. It's kind of hard to deposit calcium now. So, but the answer isn't to take one of the bone medicines either. Then your health will go down the tubes all over the whole body.
And that's called Women's Best Friend, right?
A Woman's Best Medicine for Menopause.
Oh, Woman's Best Medicine.
Mm-hmm. That probably came out about 10, 12 years ago. Any other questions?
That was great, Marianne.
Yeah.
Well, so you guys all need to know these things. And I like to throw in some case histories because for some reason people really perk up their ears when I talk about a case history.
It's true. That was great.
That'll really stick with you when you hear how some people have suffered by making these mistakes. Now, our next class will be 3 weeks from now. I'm always going to have them on a Monday night from 7 to 8 p.m. So that will be Monday. Let's see. I wrote it down somewhere. Oh, I wrote it and I lost it. Oh, here it is. Monday, June 27th, the next one. So that way we'll get it in before the 4th of July weekend.
7 to 8?
7 to 8. I'm always going to keep the classes at 7 o'clock. And again, if you miss the class, you can always access them, and you all have the number to access the classes if you miss them.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yes,
everybody
excellent.
Take care. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good night.
You're welcome. Good night.